You know, it's no secret that in our day and time, it just doesn't seem like a dollar goes as far as it used to. And so consequently, I saw eggs in the store the other day, over $5 for a dozen eggs. And so when we see the price of things, it's no surprise that people sometimes have to cut back on their spending in various ways. Well, I read a story the other day about a man and his wife that were going over the household budget, reviewing their finances, the credit card bills, the house payment, and all those things. And like many folks in our day and time, they just had way too much month left at the end of the money. So they decided that, as the old saying goes, they would tighten their belt just a little and they'd try to spend a little bit less money and maybe they could just save a little bit. Well, a few days later, the man's wife was out shopping, and in the course of her shopping, she ended up at the mall, and she ended up at Dillard's. And there she found the dress of her dreams, and it wasn't on the sale rack. It was too expensive, but she just had to have that dress, so she bought that dress, and she took it home. And she showed her husband the dress. And he just shook his head in disbelief. He said, "How? How could you? After all we have talked about, after all we said the other day about spending less, cutting back, and saving money, how could you do this?" She said, "Well, I was in Dillard's and the devil made me do it." He said, "Well, why didn't you take the Bible's advice? And when the devil said to buy the dress, why didn't you say, 'Get behind me, Satan'?" She said, "I did." And he said, "Oh, you ought to see how it fits in the back. The devil made me do it." Have you ever watched children playing? And at some point when a group of children are playing, something's going to go wrong. Somebody's going to spill something. Something's going to get broken. Somebody's going to get hurt. And when something spills, something gets broken, somebody gets hurt, the next thing you hear is a very shrill cry, "Look what you made me do!" Well, there's a story like that in the long ago. We find it in the Bible. But it involves adults and it doesn't involve children. And if we read the story in a crass and literal fashion, it really doesn't make sense. But if we read the story the way the author of the story intended for it to be read, it's actually one of the most meaningful and one of the most up-to-date stories you'll find in the world of literature. Because what this story does is it holds up the mirror to human nature in an unsurpassed fashion. It takes place in the Garden of Eden. And Adam and Eve, along with the serpent, are the principal characters. God has told Adam and Eve that they are to dress and to keep the garden, and they can eat the fruit of any tree in the garden except the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. God said, "The day you eat thereof, you'll surely die." Well, the serpent tempted Eve, as you remember the story in Genesis chapter 3. The serpent tempted Eve, and Eve ate that forbidden fruit. And then Eve takes that forbidden fruit, and she gives it to Adam. And Adam eats the forbidden fruit also. Guess what, folks? You can't hide from God. So God calls to Adam. God says, if you read, it's all in Genesis 3. God says, "Adam, where art thou? Where art thou, Adam?" Like God didn't know where he was. He knew where he was. He just wanted to see if Adam would own up to it. And Adam says, "I'm here. Where have you been?" "Well, Adam," or "Well, God, I was naked and I was afraid, and so I hid myself." And God says, "Well, Adam, how did you know you were naked? Have you eaten that fruit, that forbidden fruit I told you not to eat of?" And then Adam speaks the words of our text this morning in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 12. He says, "The woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me of the fruit, and I did eat." God, it's not my fault. That woman you gave me, God, she gave me the fruit, and I ate. It's not my fault. Now, it's like Adam's saying, "Look what she made me do." The truth is, every one of us in this room plays the blame game. We've all played the blame game more than once in our lives. Whether we've blamed God, blamed the devil, blamed the woman, blamed the man, we have all blamed someone about something. And it's embarrassing, it's shameful, and it's disappointing. But look at Adam in this story. Everybody that reads the story is ready to admit that there's something dreadfully wrong in this story. You read the story to a small child, and even a child is going to see the tragedy in this story of Adam and Eve. The hero of the story, supposedly, Adam's supposed to be the hero, but Adam has failed to be heroic. Adam hasn't measured up to his possibilities. And Adam made a wrong choice. The man is pictured as being placed by God, the Creator, in a garden. And in this garden where God placed Adam, there were choices to be made. God has established parameters that need to be respected. There are certain things He can do and certain things He cannot do. But Adam, and Adam alone, has the power over his own actions. He's standing at the forks of the road, and he has the capacity to choose which direction he's going to go. Eve offers him the fruit, and Adam, the man, given the power of choice, makes a very wrong choice. He has the power to obey. He has the power to disobey. And having that power, he chooses to disobey. And choosing to disobey, he has done wrong. Well, you know what that does? That makes Adam one of our close relatives, doesn't it? Because all of us, at one point or another in our lives, all of us have made wrong choices. All of us at some point in our life have made choices that, if we are honest, we will admit we're not proud of them. Paul would write in Romans chapter 3 and verse 12, "All have sinned and come short of the glory of God." And when Paul said that, Paul was speaking a universal truth. If we're honest with ourselves, and if we're honest with each other, and if we're honest before God, we will all admit, we must confess, that we have not always done our best. And we have not always been our best. Like Adam in the long ago, sometimes we've made wrong choices. But I want you to look at Adam's conduct. Not only does Adam make a wrong choice, Adam refuses to take responsibility for his wrong choice. How much better would it have been if Adam had just faced his disobedience honestly? How much better would it have been when God said, "Adam, did you eat the fruit that I forbid you to eat?" If Adam had just said, "Yes, God, I knew what I should have done." For Adam to have said, "Yes, God, I had no doubt as to what I the turn I ought to take. For Adam to have said, yes, God, I must admit I deliberately chose the wrong path. It would have been so much more noble of Adam to hear him say, Adam, God, I did the wrong thing. And I have no one to blame for my shameful conduct but myself. But Adam refused to take that course. And Adam tried to shift the blame. He tried to pass the blame off. He said, the woman that you gave me, Lord, she gave me the fruit and I ate it. Trying to pass the blame. In doing this, Adam becomes guilty of a practice that has become almost universal in our world. Ask Adam, Adam, why did you do wrong? Adam, why did you disobey God? And he'll say, well, it ought to be as plain as the nose on your face. Anybody ought to be able to see why I did it. I did it because of Eve. It's her fault. She's the one. She ate fruit, and she gave it to me. You can just hear me. I'm not at fault in this, God. I'm not to blame. It's Eve's fault. You actually read the story. Not only is Eve to blame for Adam's failure, but since Eve was God's gift, Adam's trying to place the final blame on God Himself. Now Adam says, it was Eve, Lord. She's the one. She messed it up. But you gave her to me, Lord. So, Lord, it's really all your fault that I messed up. Folks, in that same way, men and women have blamed God for sin all through the centuries. How many times have you heard this? Or something similar to this? Well, if God didn't intend for me to live this way, why did He give me the hot passions that run in my blood? Well, yeah, I may be a filthy person, but God made me that way. You ever heard somebody say something kind of like that? Well, I'm not to blame for the way I am. God made me this way. It's God's fault, not mine. So there it is. Men and women are not to blame for their sin. They will freely tell you that. The clay of which I'm made is responsible for my sin. The tempting serpent is to blame for my sin. But God is most to blame because God made me the way that I am. You actually listen to people and break it down to its simplest terms. And when you see someone do something wrong, everything and everybody is to blame except the sinner himself. And folks, this passing of the blame, it's almost universal. It's a story that runs throughout the Bible of blaming somebody else. One of my favorite stories is back when the children of Israel were escaping from Egyptian bondage. They're wandering in the wilderness. And Moses goes up Mount Sinai, the mountain of God, to get the Decalogue. And Moses takes longer coming back from the mountain than the children of Israel think he should. And they're ready to appoint a captain and have idols and go back to Egypt because they're remembering the flesh pots and the leeks and the garlics and all the things. They've forgotten the whips and the bricks. And Egypt just looks so wonderful in retrospect. And so they talked to Aaron, and Aaron said, well, we'll build a golden calf. He says, bring me all your jewelry. And they bring Aaron all their gold jewelry, and they put it into the fire, and they melt it down. And when it's melted down, they make a golden calf, an idol for them to worship. And Moses comes down from the mountain. And Moses sees the golden calf, and he looks to Aaron, and he says, what is this? And Aaron said, well, the people brought their jewelry and we put it in the fire and amazingly out comes this golden calf. It just happened. Aaron's not going to own up to the fact that he told him to do it, you see. Or then there's another place over in 1 Kings chapter 20 where a man is assigned to guard a dangerous prisoner. A man that the king has appointed to utter destruction, and the prisoner escapes. And the servant that was responsible for him, that was guarding him, they said, what happened? He said, well, as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. It's not my fault. I had so many other duties to attend to and so much other going on, and I was just trying to multitask, and he just got away from me. I'm sorry. We've got to learn to accept responsibility for ourselves. We've got to learn to accept responsibility for our own actions. This is going to sound harsh. I don't mean for it to sound harsh, but I mean to speak the truth. And that is this: the man or woman who passes the blame to someone else is usually lying. When Adam placed the responsibility for his failure upon Eve and then upon God, Adam wasn't telling the truth. When Aaron said he was not to blame for making the golden calf, he wasn't being truthful. The soldier who declared he was too busy to take care of his duties stated a falsehood. Generally speaking, the better we are at making excuses, the worse we are at telling the truth. That man or that woman who passes the blame is generally a wrongdoer and a liar. And yet we go on. We go from generation to generation making excuses that are as childish as they are false. But don't we find that we often have such an easy explanation, especially for our decent and respectable sins, you know, like being high-strung or being high-tempered? Well, yes, I must admit I am a bit irritable and hard to get along with sometimes. Yeah, well, yes, now and then I do make a horrible scene, but I'm not to blame. You see, it's in my DNA. My grandfather had a really terrible temper. You ever heard somebody say something like that? Or, well, I know I've got a bad temper. I know I'm irritable. But I had a step aunt twice removed on my next door neighbor's side of the family. And that's the reason I'm the way I am. And I'm tired and I'm overworked and just on and on and on and on. And we even offer alibis when we neglect our duty. I have found, and I'm not proud of it, but I've found that the older I get, the fewer filters I sometimes have. And sometimes that's not a good thing. If my mother was alive and you asked her, she'd say, I never had filters to start with. But I really did at one time. But not long ago, I had somebody say, well, you know, I just don't see any need to come to church. He said, churches are full of nothing but hypocrites. And I won't say the devil made me do it. I won't say it's Norma's fault. It was all my own idea. I just looked him right in the eye. I said, well, come on and join us. There's room for one more. He almost acted offended, Leon. Well, I don't need to go to church. I'm as good as most of the people down there are. That's not what God's telling us it's all about. Well, I'm too busy, and on and on and on. You get the list of excuses. Failing to take responsibility for our actions, my friends, is not just for respectable sinners. The further down the hill we go, the less likely we are to blame ourselves. And the deeper we sink, the greater our skill comes in making excuses. That person that makes excuses, not only are they telling a falsehood, they're cowards. Why did Adam not face, frankly, squarely, the fact of his sins? Why did Adam not blame himself? Because he was afraid. He was afraid of God. And then perhaps his greatest fear was of himself, because he has to live with himself. Adam passed the blame because he did not have the courage to face the facts about Adam. It was cowardice, pure and simply. When we pass the buck, when we pass the blame, little by little, almost imperceptibly, it tends to put out our eyes, cloud our vision, and desensitize us. No matter how conscious we might be of our own sin, no matter how conscious we might be of our own wrongdoing, we have the ability oftentimes to excuse ourselves until we come to a point where we accept our excuses. And we actually become blameless in our own eyes. My friends, we can't deceive ourselves to the point that we believe our own excuses. That's what Pilate did when he symbolically washed his hands and he said, "I'm free from the blood of this just man." Pilate was trying to regain some of his lost self-respect. Constantly passing the blame. We close the door of all moral improvement right in our faces. The one person who will never get right with God is the person who refuses to face the fact that they're wrong. We have to learn to accept personal responsibility for our actions. That's the honest and the right thing to do. And it's refreshing to find a man or a woman honest enough to face the plain facts about themselves. A person who, if they've done wrong, honestly will say, "I've done wrong, no matter the cost." If they've made a mistake, they don't try to hide it or cover it with an alibi. They don't try to shift the blame to someone else. And they don't play the game of comparative sin. "Well, I know what I did was bad, but it's not near as bad as what you said. I saw Leon do." You know what, somebody, you say that, somebody, "What did Leon do?" That's the way we are, isn't it? We don't want to shift the blame. We don't want to play this game of comparative sin. We just need to simply say, "I've made a mistake. I've done wrong." We can respect an individual like that. When we blame ourselves for our wrong choices, when we take responsibility for our actions, we're simply telling the truth and taking the way of honesty. You see, as I said at the very beginning, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And yet for that person, for that sinner, for that individual willing to confess and be cleansed of sin, there's infinite hope. We may have sinned, we may have transgressed God's law, but there's forgiveness through the precious blood of Jesus Christ. It's obtained by God's divine plan of salvation. And we're told if we confess our sin, He's faithful and just to forgive our sins and can cleanse us from all unrighteousness. That was the case of Simon the sorcerer. He had responded to God's plan of salvation. He had been buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of past sins. But he was told, "Repent and pray, if this the thought of thy heart would be forgiven thee." Don't need to worry about that thunder. It's going to quit in a minute, and I am too. Up here. More often than not, our sin is private. It's between us and God. Sometimes that sin's public in nature. Folks know about it. And the influence of the church is jeopardized because of it. Is there something standing between you and God this morning? Is there something that keeps your heart from being right with God today? Is there something that we can do to help you make your heart right with God? Whether it's putting the Lord on in baptism or having brothers and sisters pray with you and for you. Whatever the need of your life to make your life right with God is, if we can help you with that, we invite you to come as we stand and while we sing.